The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. Miggy's goal greeted with warm reception. Newcastle fans head back to London for a showdown with Tottenham. And home comforts extended to Newcastle's women at St James's Park. Yes, hello again. This is Pod on the Tyne. I am Taylor Payne. And of course, I'm joined by the Athletic's Newcastle United correspondent, Mr. Chris Woff. And it's the triumphant return of our senile.
You were about to say senile there, weren't you?
It was very close, wasn't it? It was so close. It's the triumphant return of our senior writer, George Cogg. And George, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm right. I'm okay. Yeah, why is it triumphant as opposed to just factular?
I don't know. Just seemed like a nice thing to say, as if we were happy about the fact you were back.
Right, well, that's very nice.
When the truth is anything
but... You won the New York half marathon, didn't you? So you won that one. You've won Paris now, and now you've won New York.
No, you've misheard. I run the Newcastle,
half marathon.
I definitely didn't win. It was great, though. I had a lovely time. Thank you for mentioning it last week. And yes, far more importantly, I saw my mum for the first time for 2 years because of COVID. Over there. So it was a very emotional and great time. And one thing I did actually want to mention before we kind of get started, I went to watch the New York Knicks play basketball.
Go Knicks.
Lose Knicks, as they did. They've always lost when I've seen them. They're very Newcastle-y, I think. But it did just sort of, that sort of stadium experience in America did make me think of a couple of things. Firstly, they were selling NFTs like nobody's business. I saw that Liverpool have now started doing this, these non-fungible tokens. They were sort of advertising that within the stadium a lot at Madison Square Garden. So I'm sure that's on the way, because usually where America leads, the rest of us follow. But the other thing was, it was just that sort of fan experience inside the stadium. And it is just so much better over there. In terms of, you know, I could get a New York beer if I wanted. I could get local food, kind of all that sort of stuff. These tiny little merch sort of stalls. But, you know, get local produce. I can't wait for that to happen at Newcastle. I want that to happen at St James's Park. I've said this before, but I'm saying it again.
See, I've never been sure about this whole sitting and eating food in your seats while there's a game of football on, because it's really hard to call a referee a wanker when you've got a mouthful of nachos, isn't it? You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem like it would work.
When you've got a Savoy dip.
now this is different, Chris.
Yeah. I mean for the bit beforehand. Like when you're in the concourses and things like that. And having a drink, being able to drink a local beer, pint of number 9, pint of writer's block. That's what I would like to drink. And, you know, a Geordie banger in a bun.
Lovely stuff. Chris, how are you? I feel like we haven't even said hello to you yet. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm all right, yeah. I am actually down in London in our office, Ooh. Which I'd never been to, this new office that, well, I say new, we've been in it since, I think, the midway through the pandemic, but the first time I've been down to it. So I am in like a weird podcast pod, I think it's called. And apparently our producer says that I look like I'm in sort of some Eastern European sort of film, because it's a very weird lighting that is around me at the moment. So I feel a bit odd, I feel a bit misplaced, but equally, no, delighted to be chatting to the two of you.
Have you been invited down to London for a particular... George, let's just clear this up. Is Chris getting sacked this afternoon? Is that what's happening?
No such luck.
Well, George was meant to be joining me, and then, you know, as he usually does, he decided he didn't want to sit next to me for 3 hours on a train, so instead just, yeah, I'm here by myself.
I couldn't face more travel.
Fair play. Nothing wrong with that. Anyway, before we crack on, chaps, just enough time to tell you about the latest offer from The Athletic. So you can subscribe to The Athletic now and get your first 6 months at just £1 a month. Go to theathletic.com patreon.com/NewcastlePod. You'll get full access to all the great writing and analysis, as well as ad-free versions of all of the Athletics podcasts. But don't worry, if you want to hear me and George talking about shaving your balls, you can still listen to the adverts on the other versions from the likes of Spotify, etc. So make your way to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and sign up now for 6 months at just £1 a month. We'll be back in a sec.
Come on, you Mackies.
Right, chaps, there's been no Premier League football for a little while, has there? But there has been some international action and a few injuries and a few appearances and a couple of goals and some records set. Chris, it's been a busy couple of weeks, even though there's been no Newcastle games.
It has, yeah. I mean, Newcastle have quite a few internationals involved in this. Well, I say quite a few. There's about half a dozen first-team players who are off on international duty. And, I mean, there has been a couple of injury concerns in terms of players withdrawing from. So, obviously, England played Switzerland at the weekend and Fabian Schär was expected to be involved, but actually withdrew from the Switzerland squad. He's had a bit of a groin problem for a while. He was obviously forced off in a game a few weeks ago. And hopefully that is precautionary on that in that regard, because he's first-choice defender for Newcastle. I mean, him and Dan Byrne have struck up that successful partnership, hopefully, at centre-back at the moment. So he will be assessed this week, as will Martin Dubravka, who obviously is Newcastle's number one goalkeeper. He was away with Slovakia. He will not be taking part in their next friendly. And there's been a bit of confusion, I think, around exactly what is going on with Martin Dubravka. There was some sort of concern, some rumours of sort of angina and sort of an issue in that regard. Having spoken to people, the suggestion is that actually he seems to have had a bit of a virus. He seems to have just been a bit down in that sense and affected physically in that regard. And so Newcastle are going to assess him this week, and we'll obviously get more from Eddie Howe from that on Friday. But I don't think it is something that's necessarily as serious, or at least the indications are it's not necessarily as serious as it seems to have been a little bit lost in translation when the Slovakia head coach has come out and said he's got angina, which obviously would be a concern. But it seems hopefully that isn't the case. But still, the two of them have to be at least doubtful for Sunday. And I mean, given that also Bruno Guimaraes is not going to be back till later in the week, Megan Almiron's not going to be back later in the week, Chris Wood might not be back later in the week, some of Newcastle's players who you would either expect to start or have been starting in recent weeks aren't going to have trained much at all with Eddie Howe and the team going into Sunday, and whether that affects team selection will be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's a slight concern, isn't it, George? The Fabian Schär one's the one that worries me the most. He's struck up quite a good partnership with Dan Byrne, hasn't he, going forward? And it would be a shame if an injury keeps him out.
Yeah, he's been outstanding. He has been outstanding. Obviously, been a couple of disappointing results in a row. But yeah, Schär and Byrne have been excellent together. So hopefully not too many changes at the back, because you know, that has been a solid base during their very good run of results. Good to see Almiron score for Paraguay. I mean, he's come back into the team in the last couple of matches, and I thought did pretty well at Chelsea. And you know, certainly gave tempo to the team. And no, what you don't want after a long international break, which you would hope is a chance for people to kind of get back to fitness, is to actually end up losing players. That would be difficult, because it's a tricky run at this point. Another couple of difficult games ahead.
Almiron's first senior goal, competitive goal since the 6th of February last year, when he scored twice against Southampton. So that's important in that regard, because he hasn't, I think, I'm not exactly sure how many games it is for Newcastle. I think it's 30 odd games now for Newcastle he's gone without scoring. So big goal for him, because he has worked very hard off the ball, and he's had a couple of opportunities in recent games, but actually that end product is what he hasn't quite had. So hopefully it gives him a bit of confidence.
Well, we were all delighted to see Miggy score for Paraguay, and it was a very smart finish as well, but we weren't quite as happy as the South American commentators. Goal!
Sangre joven. en pase de Julián Ciso. La fortuna. Y ahora el gol de Miguelín Dalmirón para pensar en un nuevo proceso para que este jugador de la Premier League tenga confianza buscando lo que tiene que ser mejor para la selección.
I would just love, I would love Martin Tyler to do that, you know, once. You know, it's just like a regulation, really.
My God, he's still going.
Still going, George.
Just to respond to a Premier League goal like that would be amazing.
Fortuna con los nuevos y con Miguelito.
God almighty. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Join us next time on Bottom of the Time when we'll actually talk about Almiron's goal.
Just to give you context for that goal, that was to put Paraguay 3-0 up in a dead rubber. You'd think they won the World Cup the way he was going on. 3-0 up in a dead rubber game, and he goes on like that.
Well, maybe...
Absolutely incredible.
Maybe not.
I'd applaud the enthusiasm, haven't you? Come on.
Yeah, maybe not even Martin Tyler. I want Matthew Raisbeck to do that next time Newcastle score a goal.
Can you imagine John Anderson
just
doing
staring at him. Ando staring at Razor. What are you doing? But what a goal. I mean, what an amazing goal that can only possibly have been.
I haven't seen the goal. It must have been the best ball ever scored by anyone in the history of football.
I mean, it was a tidy finish, but it wasn't.
A tidy finish, right. Tidy finish, wow.
God
tremendous.
Almighty.
Absolutely tremendous.
Hey, well, in other positive news as well, this happened last week after we'd recorded, but before we published the podcast. Congratulations to Chris Wood, New Zealand's record goal scorer. Fantastic achievement, Chris.
It is. I mean, New Zealand are still on course to try and qualify for the World Cup as well. I mean, it's a really convoluted process, I think, that they go through. So they now have another match before this podcast will go out, I think, whether then if they win that, they then have another qualifying round, I think, against an Asian team in a few months' time. But for Chris Wood personally, he has helped them along the way. And yeah, he's moved into 30-odd goals now for New Zealand. They're all-time top goal scorer. A magnificent achievement. I mean, Eddie Howe commented about it out in Dubai as well and basically said he would ideally like Chris Wood to be out with them in Dubai and practicing with them. But still, in terms of for him personally to have broken that mark and to have set the record for his country, absolutely wonderful, yeah.
It's a hell of a record. Just to compare the two, though, this is the audio from Chris Wood's goal.
New Zealand, Chris Wood about to make it four, and he's broken the goal-scoring record for New Zealand. He's moved past Vaughan Coveney. He's the outright leader now, Chris Wood. Two on the night for New Zealand, and he makes it 3-0.
I mean, that's the equivalent of just, you know, trotting back to the centre circle and shaking hands with the captain, isn't it? That commentary.
That's just not the same, is it? I'm detecting a hint of Bury in that New Zealand accent from that commentator as well.
I know, I was expecting a bit of Flight of the Conchords or something there, but there was nothing, was there? Nothing.
Oh,
it was just,
man.
Pure Preston.
Did he say touch wood made in his interview afterwards?
Touch wood, mate. If he'd be great if he could bring that back to Newcastle and start putting the ball in the net, George, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it felt very important that he got that goal at Southampton, you know, very good header. I mean, I think he's gone up and down in terms of his performances since then, but no, that would be, you know, that's a couple of goals in his last four or five games, so no, he definitely needs that. So yeah, hopefully he can carry that on at Spurs if he's available.
Absolutely, and in other news as well, Bruno got an assist in a little short 10-minute cameo for Brazil as well. Chris, it's an interesting one. He's still putting the performances in for the national team. How long before we see him and Jolo Kanté together in the Brazil shirts in the middle of that midfield? It can't be long, can it?
It can't be. I mean, I wrote about this.
The best midfielder in the world, George. Did you hear this last week? The best midfielder in the world, according to the stats at the minute.
Is that right? Is that true?
No, I mean, it's not true, is it? Obviously, it's hyperbole.
Over a certain period of time, though, he is basically the best midfielder in the world.
30 seconds.
Statistically, so, yeah.
When nobody else was playing.
But in terms of Bruno Guimarães, he came on, I think it's his last two or three games he's come on and provided an assist.
Yeah.
Another nice through ball in the box to set up the goal. And yeah, he's clearly full of confidence, clearly part of that Brazil squad, and looks like he will be a part of the squad that goes to Qatar. Is there time for Joe Linton to get in there? I mean, possibly not. There's a lot of midfielders in the Brazil squad, but if you ask a lot of Newcastle fans, would they rather see Fred or Joe Linton in the Brazil midfield? You'd have thought, you know, there's no comparison there. And
it's not even a question, is it? It's not even a question. Fantastic stuff. Right then, anything else to write? Anything else to talk about before we move on?
Well, I'll just say, having missed last week's pod, I'll just say very, very briefly that I did watch the Everton match before I went, and I think I maybe agreed with something you said on Twitter, Taylor, but that, you know, we have to put in perspective things a little bit. Newcastle are 14th in the table. It was an astonishing run that took them there from the position they were in. Yes, Everton was very, very disappointing, and it was a horrible way to come into the international break. But really, it should just sort of, I think it should just reiterate what a fine fine run it was that took them there, really. The fact that people are so sort of, that, you know, they were so sort of angry and disappointed after that match. You know, they're not safe there yet, they're not there yet, but they put themselves into a fantastic position. And although that was, yeah, that was a bit of a blow, you know, it's been a brilliant run.
It really has. And I mean, it is a shame that it's been slightly negative on social media since the Everton game. It's almost like we needed another game of football to happen straight away for us to renew that positivity. We've had that 2 week break now, and hopefully when they go into the Spurs game, which we'll be talking about in a minute, there might be a renewed sense of optimism there, Chris. They've got themselves in a better position, and it could be that, you know, Newcastle come back refreshed from Dubai and ready to take on the next set of fixtures.
Yeah, I think it just felt like everyone needed, I think we all needed a break from Newcastle United playing for a little bit. Obviously the players and the staff did, but I also think it was an intense run of fixtures over an intense period of time over the course of the last few months. It's just about every single game having so much riding on it, and I think emotional energy that had been expended by supporters as much as anyone else, and maybe a lot of that came out after that Everton game because there was a lot of frustration, and I understand that because although I agree with everything you guys have said, I think also we got drawn into that sort of false sense of security we've had previously with Newcastle, where as soon as you think you can start again high, and that Everton team, Newcastle could and should have gone there, and if they'd shown the form that they had in the weeks beforehand, could and should have won at Everton. I think Everton were poor throughout as well. I didn't think that Everton really deserved to win. I thought neither team really deserved to win. So hopefully, yeah, after this sort of 2.5 weeks off, it'll be something special again at Spurs, but we shall chat about that in a second.
Got to just say as well, well done to the fans and the money they spent and the miles that they did over that couple of weeks. I mean, the amount of away games that came one after the other. We had Thomas Concannon on talking about the schedule and all that, and about the cost and the sacrifice that fans make to go and do that. It's astonishing. Every single away end sold out. You know, you have to take your hat off to them. You know, I honestly don't know how they do it, but it's amazing. And they always make a racket, and they always, you know, represent the club in the best way. They're a great bunch of lads and lasses who go to all those away games, and I take my hat off to them every single game. They're brilliant.
Hear, hear, hear.
Right then, we'll be back in a second. We'll have a chat about Spurs coming up. Right then, chaps, Newcastle United are going back into Premier League action very soon with a trip to Spurs this Sunday after a successful trip to Dubai, shall we say. How are we feeling about facing Harry Kane and co? Chris, it's going to be a tough game, isn't it? Whichever way you slice this one, they're a good team, Spurs.
It is going to be a tough game, but the fact that Newcastle have had this rest, that they have gone to Dubai, and yes, by all accounts, having spoken to people in and around behind the scenes, it's been another successful trip. Obviously, we've said a lot before about why, how, and a lot of the other senior staff at Newcastle see the Jeddah trip as having been very significant. It was a similar sort of feeling to this sort of trip. The first couple of days they were there and they did sort of social activities together, a lot of team bonding, meals out, and the like. And then they've done some hard training sessions in the heat and finished with a game where they won 5-0 in a 60-minute friendly against Stephen Taylor's local side, which was I know Stephen Taylor manager. I mean, that was bizarre. Yeah, Dwight Gayle even scored twice. Dwight Gayle, do you remember him?
Never heard of him.
He scored twice, as did Alan St. Maximin, and Big Joe got the other one. So it's good to see that the Big Joe hopefully is still recovering from his injury as well. But
did you just call him the Big Joe?
I don't know. Maybe I did. But
you just called him the Big Joe, haven't you? That's new.
That could be his new name. Yeah, yeah.
The Big Joe.
The Big Joe. But yeah, so in terms of the trip, I think Eddie Howe is very pleased with what's happened there. We've already mentioned the potential injury concerns and the fact that some players have been away on international duty, and that may affect their potential involvement, although I can't see any way that Chris wouldn't start regardless at Spurs. I think he's the one who would come straight back into the team. And I do think Newcastle have an opportunity. What I hope is that, and I sort of wrote about him the last few days as well, is that Alan St. Maximin, this 2 weeks been really important for him. He hadn't trained very much at all going into the Chelsea and Everton games. He trained twice in 4 weeks. He's had a decent block to be able to get physically ready again, to get reintegrated back into the side, and hopefully he can bring more to the team, because as impressive as Newcastle were for most of that 9-game run, when they didn't have St. Maximin, they still lacked a lot in attack. And obviously still don't have Callum Wilson quite ready yet, although him and Kieran Trippier are hopefully making progress. So I think I think it's a tough game on Sunday. It really will be a tough game, but I also think Newcastle will go there and fancy their chances to an extent, because I certainly think on the counter-attack, if you've got Alan St. Maximin fit, then they should be able to create opportunities.
With regards to the defence, George, I mean, we spoke before about Fabian Schär possibly being out, and Tottenham put 3 past West Ham there last time out and absolutely schooled them. They've got some amazing attacking talent in that Spurs team. You've got to be worried if there's a makeshift Newcastle defence facing up against Kane and Son and Lucas Moura and the rest of them, haven't you?
Yeah, I think Kane's got something like 8 in his last 9 games for club and country, which is, you know, he's banging form. They're a fascinating team. I'm going to be in the away end for this match. I'm really looking forward to it, because I've not been to that stadium before. And you know, they're a sort of weird team. They're a team who've lost to Southampton and Wolves, then beat Man City, then lost to Burnley, then thrashed Leeds, then went out of the FA Cup to Borough, and then they've had 2 or 3 really good results in a row. So they're sort of in form. I agree with Chris though that, you know, the away trip for Newcastle last time, the warm weather trip, really did have a positive effect on the team. It galvanised everyone there. They haven't had the distraction of the transfer window this time. And, you know, it is an opportunity. And I think that, you know, Newcastle, the great thing about watching Newcastle at the moment is that they're causing problems for other teams. So even when they're not winning, they didn't beat Chelsea. They lost to Chelsea in sort of very, very sort of disheartening fashion right at the end. But they caused Chelsea problems. They will cause Everton, you know, they caused Everton problems, and they've done that throughout this run. So, yeah, at the back, there would be a few concerns. Although I suppose the other thing to say is that one of the great strengths of the squad in the last few weeks has been that when important players have gone out of the team, others have kind of come in and equipped themselves well. So I guess we have to, you know, maybe we should stop thinking about the team in that respect, because without St. Maximin Wilson, they've shown they can win games. But yeah, it's a big test, it's a big challenge, but they shouldn't be overawed by any of it.
Speaking of Harry Kane as well, and obviously the transfer chat's going to continue about him throughout the summer, isn't it? It seems like every summer now we have a new potential suitor for Harry Kane. Alan from work, you know Alan from work, don't you, George? He's been writing all about being a big money striker, and apparently with inflation taken into account, his £15 million transfer to Newcastle United would be worth somewhere near £222 million in today's money. Still a bargain, that, isn't it? Still a bargain, George.
Yes, I asked him about this, so I helped him with this piece. It's a kind of funny piece, really, sort of research. What sort of British transfer records would be worth now if you add inflation and all the rest of it? And it's not according to achievement, it's really just according to inflation. And he would still be way, way, way at the top of the list. I mean, he said, would I be worth that? And it was like, well, if I was 24, 25, 26, I'd still bang a few in. So he wasn't selling himself short.
I'm not down.
I mean, it is a phenomenal amount of money, but it does make you remember how big that felt, you know, back in 1996, £15 million, Newcastle setting a transfer record. I mean, it was astonishing. I mean, it felt astonishing at the time. But of course, it's peanuts now. It's pennies. It's absolute pennies. But it does give you a sort of sense of how big a deal Shearer to Newcastle was back then. The thing I love about Shearer, you know, the way he said, was that he just loved it. He loved having that tag. He thought it was fantastic. He thought it was brilliant. He wanted it. He loved it. He didn't want to, he didn't want to lose that tag. And it never weighed on him. It was the opposite. And and I think he said that one of the kind of interesting things he said was that he never felt that thing about you only being as good as your last game. He always felt you're only as good as your next game, which is what always pushed him to do more, to try harder, to do more and more. And it was just an interesting little kind of twist on the old cliche.
Yeah, I mean, a price tag like that, Chris, and all of the pressure that comes with it, that could be an albatross for some players, couldn't it? It could be a real problem for them. They could really struggle to live up to it, the pressure that comes with it. But Shearer seemed to revel in it, didn't he?
He did, and I mean, that sort of, you look at it now, and it would be a world record transfer now, if even in these circumstances. But actually, it isn't published right at this very moment we're recording. It may well be by the time the podcast's out, but we've also, beyond the piece that's been published this morning, looks at the biggest transfers in general in Premier League history. I've looked specifically at Newcastle United's and how they have gone by inflation, and that's an interesting list and is worth looking at those. They will be listed within the piece itself, but it's the cost of Marcelino, which I think will stagger a lot of people. You're talking about you're talking a close to £50 million centre back in Marcelino for not very much return. And if you compare him to Alan Shearer might be worth four times as much, but I think it gave innumerable amounts more to Newcastle United than Marcelino might have given for that.
I wonder how his finger is. I wonder if his finger's all right now.
Well, exactly. Jesus. Exactly. And the top four are all strikers, I believe, but there are some defenders who make the top 10. But it's also, it shows a lot about the Mike Ashley era, because I think all of the top 10 are pre-Mike Ashley, or certainly outside of the Mike Ashley era. So a lot of them, it shows the sort of ambition during the Sir John Hall, Freddie Shepherd times. And although some of those transfers didn't necessarily work out, it also showed that they were willing to invest, unlike the Mike Ashley era. That'll come as a surprise to absolutely nobody. So, yeah.
Get on The Athletic and have a look at that when it drops. We did mention Alan St. Maximin before, Chris, and I feel like we have a chat about him like every other week at the moment. We constantly sort of dip in and out of the St. Maximin story, don't we? Chris, you've had a bit of a dive into his career so far, haven't you, on The Athletic? And the French, they don't really rate him, do they? The comments kind of about him are that, you know, he's they know he's gifted, but they see him as being a sort of selfish footballer or whatever. But of course, you know, the French, they didn't like Cantona or David Ginola either, and we saw what they did in their careers. It's an interesting moment to Maximin, isn't it?
It is. I mean, the caveat to, because a lot of people, certainly a lot of Newcastle fans, will look at what Sam Maximin does when he's at his very best for Newcastle and think, well, why isn't he playing on the international stage? But then you look at the French squad and you look at the attacking resources they have. And I worked out that in terms of, if you include players who Didier Deschamps, the French head coach, has actually called up over the course of the last few years, he may be 17th at best in terms of in line to be a French forward. That's how many they have. Wow. If you just look at this, beyond Mbappe, you've got Giroud, you've got Benzema, Marcus Thuram, so many players across Europe, some who haven't even been capped.
Griezmann.
As well, like some Max himself, Griezmann, yeah.
Griezmann,
Ben Yedder, yeah. So there is a lot of competition there, and speaking to a lot of people who sort of follow the French national team or are involved with it, including one of the coaches who coached Sam Maximin at under 20 level, basically a lot of the feedback comes back, which is similar to the sort of feedback you quite often get, which is basically perennially followed Sam Maximin throughout his career. And it's the two issues that were sort of being raised before: A, end product, does he do it often enough? I think that there have been periods over the course of the last 18 months where he has done it a lot more often, and he still is crucial to Newcastle, but it'd be still nice for him to do it even more regularly to retake that step up. And then the other one is his work off the ball. Can he work in a team structure? And also, can he work as a lot of the sort of French reporters I was speaking to say that they kept on talking about the collective, and they talked about Saint-Maximin not being so much a collective player. Now, under Eddie Howe at Newcastle, if he's going to play regularly and he's going to be successful, Eddie Howe has talked so much about that, that no player can just operate of their own accord. And Callum Wilson, when he spoke to Alan Shearer at the start of the season, said the same, that he has these conversations with Saint-Maximin, and basically has said to him, don't beat the man a second time. If you get past him, get the ball in the box. And we have seen progression from Saint-Maximin in that regard, but there is still more to come from him, and he's still building that relationship with Eddie Howe. I still think that there's a bit of give and take there in terms of how the two of them work together. All this stuff about them having fallen out was nonsense over the course of the last few weeks. But equally, Steve Bruce, one person said to me, to an extent, quote-unquote, indulged Saint-Maximin, and that's been taken some people as a negative, but equally, he got more out of Saint-Maximin than a lot of previous coaches have done. And Eddie Howe's had a bit of give and take. He let him go back to Monaco to see a physio who he trusted a few weeks ago to try and extract more. And so hopefully that want that Saint-Maximin has to play for France, he says that it drives him. He's spoken about it before. He even had an Amazon Prime documentary followed him around before the Tokyo Olympics, because he was determined to go to the Tokyo Olympics and thought that he could make it. Didn't happen in the end, but he has that desire to get to France. Someone described it to me as a carrot that Eddie Howe can use to try and extract more from him. And the Qatar World Cup's probably not going to happen for him. He may even have to wait for Didier Deschamps to go before someone else was to select him. But if he performs consistently and regularly for Newcastle, that's the only opportunity he's going to have to start playing regularly for France.
And the journalist at France Football, Christophe Larcher, he said, we don't talk about Saint-Maximin as a top player here. We know he's very gifted, but he is seen as selfish and not intelligent on the ball. Is that slightly unfair, maybe, towards Saint-Maximin? Or do you think the French have got a particular view of him and that's not going to change?
Well, I think, as Chris mentioned, that's possibly reflective of the talents France have at their disposal. You know, and let's face it, since he's been at Newcastle, he's been playing in a team that's been struggling for a lot of the time in the Premier League, either near the foot of it or just struggling full stop, struggling for possession. He's done some incredible things. Newcastle have been too reliant on him. I mean, I think that's the case. We love him. We want him to be the player that he can be here. He has not, but Newcastle have not given him a great springboard. I think we have to recognise that too. At the same time, I agree with everything that Chris has said. I ended up in sort of several arguments on Twitter after the Chelsea game when I talked about him not providing the team with the energy they needed when he came on in that match. And one of the sort of real features over the past few games has been how much Newcastle have pressed off the ball. They've been pressing teams, they've been playing a very high line. To do that, everybody has to, you know, everybody has to buy into it. Almiron, it works very well in that kind of system because he's just got that energy. He's willing to run absolutely all the time. But you can't have someone then appearing who isn't prepared to move or move enough. And so, yeah, the challenge for Howe, the challenge for Saint-Maximin is, how does that relationship work? What do they do? Can Howe get the best out of him? There's no doubt that, I mean, it's been really important for Newcastle to win games without him, I think. Same with Wilson. And so he has to fight for his place like everybody else, you know. And, you know, what you want is to see a Saint-Maximin up the pitch, tearing into people, getting around people, causing problems, making the right decisions, but then also doing his bit off the ball too. It doesn't mean he has to do it all the time, but when Newcastle are pressing, he has to join in. And it's not quite there yet. But to go back to the France Football fella, it sounds harsh, but it's reflective of the talent France have, and it's reflective of where Saint-Maximin's been playing.
Well, like Chris says, if he wants to get the best out of him, Eddie Howe is a France call-up, could probably be the biggest carrot in Eddie Howe's vegetable drawer, for want of a better expression, isn't it? So it's
people have vegetable drawers? Oh, like in a fridge?
I've got a vegetable drawer.
I thought you meant like, as in like you'd have a drawer for your cutlery and then underneath it. No, I just didn't think that through. Sorry, everyone.
I've got like a salad crisper, and then I've got like a cupboard that I keep like root vegetables in. But keep your potatoes away from your onions. That's a little tip for you.
Why is that?
I can't remember.
Oh, well, that's useful. Thanks, George.
Do they not get on?
No, I think you've got to keep your onions away from your potatoes because your onions make your potatoes go bad quicker. I'm sure I'll be corrected, whatever
right.
that is.
You heard that here first, ladies and gents, on Pod on the Tyne. Potatoes turn onions evil, according to George. We'll be back in a moment for more green grocery tips. Stay tuned. We've got a few minutes left to round everything up before we finish up, chaps. The women's team, there's been a bit of news this week about the women's team. They're going to be playing at St James's Park for the first time ever. And they're going to host Barnsley on the 1st of May. And apparently it's only £3 to get in as well for that, and free for under-16s. It's a fantastic opportunity and a great event for the women's team to be able to play at St James's Park, and a long time coming as well, isn't it, Chris? Let's be honest, this is something that maybe should have happened a long, long time ago.
Yeah, and I mean, as George can expand on in a second, he obviously spoke to Amanda Staveley, and she's been quite keen to stress how important the women's team has been, or they see as part of their vision going forward. She's met with the women's team. Her and Miadad Gadusi individually and together have been to a lot of their games. They play in High Heaton at the moment. That's where at Druid Park. That's where they play the majority of their home games. But to see them at St James's Park, hopefully there'll be a good few thousand there to cheer them on. And I mean, they're in excellent form themselves. They're top 4 points clear at the top of the Division One of the northern section of the Women's National League, and they hopefully, that's the fourth tier, I think, hopefully they can keep up this progress and they can gather the same momentum which seems to be around the rest of the club. That you see now more prominence for the women's team on the social media accounts for Newcastle United, on their website, there's more interviews.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what you want going forward. You see other clubs, the likes of Man City, what they've done with the women's team. You see Arsenal have got a very successful women's team, Chelsea, and at Newcastle it just hasn't. I mean, they're affiliated with the foundation, they haven't even been affiliated fully with the club, and so to have that due prominence and to give them that opportunity to play at St James, it's wonderful. It's going to be the first time, but I hope it's the first time of many. I hope this isn't just a sort of one-off, and that going forward the women's team can go from strength to strength.
Yeah, when I met Amanda Staveley and Miadad Gadusi, she had in fact just come off a video call with the women's team and talking about sponsorship, talking about funding, moving that forward, saying that she wants the team to get its own sponsorship commercial deal sorted out. And yeah, she spoke at that point about getting them onto the team. They have been an afterthought for the club, I think it's fair to say that, and it won't be any longer. And one of the nice things that she said to me was that, you know, she kind of wants the men and women's team to be having a bit of a race to see who can sort of get some tangible achievement first. And she was, you know, very keen for them to be on the pitch. I'm very keen for them to play at St James's. And no, as Chris said, it would be the first of, first of many times. And eventually, when Newcastle move training grounds, the women would be part of the training facility. Also, she talked about them being paid as professionals and so on and so forth. Really, really encouraging. I would encourage everyone to get down to St James's on May the 1st. I will certainly be doing my best to be there. And very exciting that they're top of the league too.
It is. I remember talking to Colin Locke a few years ago, who was involved in the women's team back when I was speaking to him. I think it was in the sort of mid-2000s when I had about 2015, something like that, when I had a chat with him. And he was talking about how the lasses have to pay for their kit fees and they have to pay for pitch fees and everything out of their own pockets. And I was absolutely flabbergasted by this and thinking, you know, I can't believe that these lasses get to wear the crest of Newcastle United on their shirt, and, you know, they've got the club's colours on, and they still have to pay for their own strips. You know, we did a bit of sort of fundraising on Twitter and stuff like that, and managed to sponsor a player for the year for her strips and stuff like that. And it just blew me away that they don't get any kind of support financially or otherwise. And it'll be a fantastic occasion when they go and play at St James's Park. And I would urge everybody to get out there and give them give them some support. Like I say, I think it's only going to be £3 to get in, under 16s free. Take the kids. It's on a Sunday afternoon. It'll be brilliant. It'll be an absolutely wonderful day out. Right then, moving on a little bit. Under 23s as well, also playing at St James's Park tonight. This match will probably have happened by the time the podcast goes live. And Tony Keogh, an old boy, has returned for a third spell with the club to help the reserve teams keep us. Chris, is there anybody worth keeping an eye on in the under 23s at the minute who's making waves? Anyone potentially threatening to break through?
Well, Lucas de Ball has been training a lot with the first team. He's been on the bench regularly recently. He's a young midfielder who Eddie Howe's really taken a liking to. I mean, not actually at the club at the moment, but Elliot Anderson was playing across at Carlisle at the weekend. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a, I would have gone across to see him, but I was on a stag do on Saturday, so I couldn't go across to that.
Oh, you're such a lad, Chris.
I know.
You were chained to a lamppost. Dereliction of duty. Chained to a lamppost in the big market, weren't you?
Yeah, with an inflatable sheep gaffer taped to you. Yeah,
and all your pubes shaved off by Manscaped.
Part of it, I was locked in an escape room because aliens had kidnapped me, but I managed to get out with two minutes, 49 seconds to spare. Not that I counted.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Seriously, yeah, yeah. Stick to a couple of pints of the lager next time, Chris. Yeah, I think you're more suited to that.
So yeah, Elliot Anderson is playing very, very well. And as we mentioned last week, Joey Barton comparing him to Diego Maradona, which maybe is a bit stretched too far, a bit of pressure on him. But in terms of Tony Cahill, now that is an interesting one because Newcastle have brought him back. He's moved into to taking a role with the academy, sort of head of academy goalkeeping, and it has allowed Newcastle to have a bit of a sort of restructure because Steve Harper obviously is involved in the academy and he's been changing little bits and bobs behind the scenes, looking at what needs to change, restructuring certain elements, and by bringing in Tony Cahill, it's basically covered a position which Newcastle have been short on over the last few months because previously Adam Bartlett, who was the lead academy goalkeeping coach, is basically now full-time with the first team. A lot of clubs now have at least a couple of goalkeeping coaches, and obviously Simon Smith remains and will remain as a goalkeeping coach, but Adam Bartlett is really impressed at Newcastle. He's now essentially, he is now part of Eddie Howe's first team staff, and so Tony Cahill has come back, someone who Steve Harper obviously knows well, played with during his time at the club. He'd been up in Scotland with Dundee United and done well up there, and he's obviously been across at Carlisle for various years. So yeah, Cahill coming in just gives them that bolstering of the academy goalkeeping structure, and hopefully again just showing that Newcastle are not, it's not just the first team or even the women's team that's been expanded and new positions being created. It's in the academy as well, when Newcastle are making sure they have enough staff members and are making sure they are covered in all these departments.
Outstanding. And finally, just before we start wrapping up, George, Paul Woolston as well, former Newcastle United reserve and Man United player, goalkeeper, has retired with persistent injury problems. But it does sound like Man United will be offering him plenty of help to adjusting to life after playing, which is to their credit. Spells at Gateshead, Darlington, Blyth, Spartans, South Shields, capped by England under-18s as well. It's a shame for Paul, isn't it? But a half-decent career there be under his belt.
Well, very sad, yeah, very sad. Talking of Simon Smith, I think he gave a nice tribute to him when this news broke, saying he worked very hard with him. Yeah, he was third choice for a little time under Rafa, but and then moved on to Man U. He was a Sunderland fan. He went on loan to South Shields, I think I'm right in saying, Chris, when he was at Newcastle. But obviously, yeah, didn't really sort of make it here. And yeah, that's a very, very early age to have to retire. So wish him all the best.
Right then, chaps, any other business to wrap up before we finish?
Well, just that international breaks are shit, aren't they? I mean, I've been away, so yeah, I can't complain.
Absolute bollocks. Absolute bollocks. I like international football as a rule, generally, but at the minute, way things are at the minute, the way the league sits and the way the Newcastle have played in recent weeks, this is the last thing I wanted.
I'm not a fan. Not a fan. No.
Everybody was tired after Everton. I think you could see that. I mean, around the team and the club, it was like, it was so intense. But yeah, come on, let's bring it on.
Taylor, just before I finish, there's one question for you. Did you prefer last week when it was just me and you, or do you prefer when it's a trio? What do you prefer? I don't know.
Be very careful here.
it was different, Chris. It was nice. It was different. It was new. It's all right for a holiday, but I don't know if I'd want to live there. You know what I mean?
All right. Right. Well, okay. I'll remember that. Right, wow.
Living in Chris.
Oh, Chris. It was weird because me and Chris were being really nice to each other on last week's podcast. And, like, you know, dead chummy and pally and that. Then George comes back and it all goes out the window, doesn't it?
You know, you need a bit of spark, you need a bit of lead in your pencil. You need anger is an energy, I've always thought that.
Absolutely, yeah. And you are, you know, let's be honest, you have that energy in you, don't you, George?
Oh, I do.
Absolutely. Right. Fantastic stuff, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. And thank you out there, dear listeners. Don't forget, we've got a special offer on at the minute, and you can get a subscription to The Athletic for your first 6 months at just £1 a month at theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod. And if that's not good value, then I don't know what is. So get yourself on theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod and check out that offer right now. George, what do you want to say?
You've well, got just this very last thing. I saw you say on Twitter that apparently we're massive in Spain. So can you A, explain that, and B, don't you think you should sign off in Spanish for our new listeners?
I would sign off in Spanish, but I don't speak any Spanish beyond dos cervezas, por favor.
So por favor, yeah, okay, we all know that one, yeah.
Hasta la vista, is that Spanish?
I'll do, yeah.
I'll be back.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, we are huge in Spain, lads. Huge. We are, at the moment, we are the 28th. Most popular podcast in Spain.
Wow.
About football, which is right. When you think, come on, Spain is a massive football country, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think that's bad going, let's be honest.
It's great, it's incredible. I can't think why. Can't think what the connection is.
No idea. Have we got any Spanish players? We haven't, have we?
No, they like pork based products, and so they like listening to me talking about them. So.
Oh, jamón. The king of jamón. Right. Christopher Waff.
What's happened is, I think the Google algorithms picked up Chris talking about chorizo at some point, and we've ended up climbing the charts.
It always comes back to meat, this podcast, doesn't it? In one way, shape, or form.
Listen out for the next Manscaped ad, exactly, if that's what you're interested in. Anyway, thanks very much, chaps. It's been great. Thanks a lot, and welcome back, George. I hope it's been all right. And we shall speak to you lot very soon. Look after yourselves out there, and we'll see you on the other side of Spurs. Goodbye.
He's still going. He's still going. 20 minutes later.
Still going.
The Athletic.